coming up on today's Compassion Radio.
Well, I tried to bring up with the former president, Khatami, about the issue of the Iranian constitution since the Islamic Republic was begun in 1979, and suggested that that might not be the best way to run a country, but the president of Iran did not appreciate me saying that.
Imagine so.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Celebrating our 74th year of sharing the light of the gospel in the most remote places on earth, we are Compassion Radio. Welcome aboard as we get started on this Thursday, the 18th of January. You've probably heard of certain parts of the world being referred to as God-forsaken places. Are there such places? And as Americans, often we might think of so-called enemy countries to the U.S. Are there such countries? On today's Compassion Radio, we're going to talk about a place that's often been referred to as both of these previously mentioned phrases. And we're going to speak to a longtime friend and ministry partner who knows a lot more than most about the country in question. Have we piqued your curiosity yet? Here's our president, Bram Floria, to introduce today's special guest.
Friends, back with us today to discuss the most recent outbreak of violence and hope. Amazing to think those two things go together, but in the world's experience of Christianity, it really is true. But in Iran right now, there's a lot of fear and a lot of opportunity for ministry. And we're going to learn more about that from our frequent and welcome guest, Jim Jennings from Conscience International. Jim, welcome back to Compassion Radio.
Thank you, Bram.
We love traveling together, and it's been a while since you and I have set foot on foreign soil, but you've got some things coming up soon, and I want to hear more about that today. The first place we want to discuss is Iran. I know neither one of us have plans to be there in the near future, but you have a lot of experience with the issue of Iran, the people of Iran, and how Iran interacts with the rest of the world. And right now, they're in bunker mentality. They're withdrawing into themselves and making huge proclamations. They feel besieged by their own youth. What's going on in Iran from your perspective?
Well, there is an inevitable uprising of the people against not just the repressive government, but the methodology of the government in dealing with their problems. And like many other countries, they have huge economic issues in terms of employment, unemployment, and prosperity. And they've been promised more than the government there can deliver. Those are among the things I would say. But I've spent a lot of time in Iran, met with their top government leaders, with their top religious leaders, and with many of the people, including some of the churches in Iran. I love the country. I love its people. It's a fabulous place with a great history. I think a lot of times in our country, we get the feeling that there are enemy countries. Mm. No, there are no enemy countries. There are people just like us in all these countries. Sometimes their political leadership leads them astray, and that is a different issue. But we need to be, I think, open-minded and concerned about this country. Right now, they're going through an upheaval, which we cannot see the future of, but it is a marker, more than the 2000 or the 2009 uprisings in Iran. This one seems to be pervasive, spread throughout the country.
Well, I would say if the country's leaders, this regime in Iran right now, which is now becoming the old guard, even though they seem to be the youth movement back in the 70s when the Shah was overthrown, they're running scared in some ways, because if there are any students of history, they look back just a few short years to the Arab Spring and seen what's happened because of it. Now, of course, it's a bit hypocritical. Much of the disaster and the humanitarian crises and the wars that have broken out after the Arab Spring were because they started it or funded those who wanted to take advantage of the opportunity. Iran has been a real fomenter of insurrections and upheaval, trying to keep the Sunni side of Islam off balance. But they rightly sense that there could be a lot of unintended consequences of this, and they're not taking any chances. I read today one of the silliest things. They decided to outlaw learning English before the age of 16, which seems kind of stupid. Nonetheless, it was one of their big moves to try to protect Iran from the invasion of Western culture and thought. What do you make of that? What kind of things are they doing right now? And what will be the consequence, do you think, of the kind of proclamations that the regime in Iran is making?
Well, I have met personally with the last three presidents of Iran, and I do think that the current president, Mr. Rouhani, is very sincere and very intelligent and open-minded about reforming his country. Of course, none of the leaders want to change the constitution, which is part of the problem.
Yes.
In Iran right now, you have three groups that are vying against each other. One are the radical religious founders of the Islamic Republic. The other would be the educated Western-oriented elite, which are smaller in number. And the other would be people who can be pushed this way than that. They're the vast middle who will go one way or the other depending on circumstances. So,
ahoy polloi.
When you go to a government office in Iran, you don't know if you're going to meet a hardliner or a moderate or somebody else. So there's, in a way, three kind of governments against each other informally. I think this current event is very interesting, but probably the push is against the supreme leader, Mr. Khamenei, more than against the administrative government of Mr. Rouhani. We'll see how that develops. But the army has to take sides eventually.
Right.
And my prediction right now is that it will not lead to another revolution, but it will, over time, die down.
And what do you think the consequence of it dying down would be? Does that reinforce the power of the regime under the supreme Ayatollah, the supreme religious oversight of any civil government, this theocracy that's become Iran? Or do you see it as being something that shatters the foundations and makes them brittle?
In a way, if there are real contradictions in a society, once you postpone a conflict, it breaks out again in a more severe way. So that would be my anticipation. One thing that I think should be noted is that Iran was a long time an American ally, but in the last 25 years, anything affiliated with the United States has been suppressed. So they cheer in big crowds, Marba America, death to America,
yes,
which is sort of a slogan that just says not necessarily they're going to drop an atomic bomb on us, but that they oppose the Western values. And that has been spread deeply in the culture. There are many people who are sincere believers in the Islamic Revolution. But I think that over time, Iran is restless and will face a larger conflict in the future. We don't know when.
Since you've worked with the civilian and the religious figures of Iran that still maintain power, what kind of experience have you had about the spiritual dynamics of all this? Is there openness to the gospel within that realm, or is it really something of a total different universe from what's happening on the street where Christ is, in fact, reaching out and building his church?
Well, I think that it's very interesting in Iran, perhaps of all the Muslim countries throughout the Middle East and South Asia region, the Iranians are very, very sincere about their religion and their faith, which means that they are willing to be open-minded and examine things in a logical way. And so, in a way, they don't mind discussing issues about Christianity, New Testament Islam. You can have a very good dialogue, and most of the Ayatollahs are very highly educated philosophically, and we've had some wonderful discussions with them. You'd be surprised how open-minded they are in some ways about ideas and yet resistant toward any change in their culture, because the culture has a strong hand controlling the mentality of the population.
Do you sense there's a tipping point coming where there's enough influence of individuals and enough change of hearts towards a egalitarian kind of society that the dam will break that way, that there'll be a renewed sense of a kind of public ethic, protecting the rights of the oppressed or the minorities, stepping beyond just the monolithic state? Is it really possible for them to evolve in this through thought and through a change of culture? Or is it going to come down to violence, first of all, and then the last man standing gets to decide the future of Iran?
Well, there was a time before 1979 when all that you just suggested was already true. They were very open. They were very secular and attempted to be Western. Many Americans were living and working there, teaching and doing work with health care, many other things. I think that can happen again. But really, I wish I knew the answer to your question in terms of the broader Muslim world, which is going through a very traumatic episode right now, trying to double down on their ancient culture. medieval culture and finding that it leads to extremism like ISIS or the war between the Sunnis and Shias, which has only gotten worse in the last 15 years. So we don't know the answer yet historically.
Yeah.
I do believe that modernity cannot be defeated because it's already here. Everybody there, all the young people carry cell phones. So I think we need to give it some time. But I think the political leadership has to be very astute and intellectual. And I have confidence that Mr. Rouhani is a logical person, if nothing else.
And that your hope, I guess, then would be that someone like Rouhani, if not him, would survive the vicissitudes of all of these changes and remain in a place of influence in the years to come so that they can help usher in the things when opportunity finally presents itself to do so.
Well, I tried to bring up with the former president, Khatami, about the issue of Iranian constitution since the Islamic Republic was begun in 1979. And it is the office of the faqih, or the interpreter, who is basically the supreme leader, who interprets everything and dictates everything according to his religious views, and suggested that that might not be the best way to run a country, but the president of Iran did not appreciate me saying that.
Imagine so.
Well, hopefully by now, you know that Compassion Radio is a going kind of ministry. Come along with us.
Thank you so much for making it possible for us to finish well in 2017. Because of you, we're completing 74 years of continuous ministry. Because of you, more people are hearing this daily broadcast than ever before, all across the United States. Because of you, new works of God in new places are now known here in the West, challenging the body of Christ to engage in the great work of completing the Great Commission. Because of you, we've gone to get the story of God's work right in the center of the world's most dangerous and threatened places. Because of you, persecuted believers in dozens of countries now know that they are not forgotten. If you've received any inspiration from Compassion Radio, if you've ever been challenged or moved by what you've heard here, if you've ever wanted to play even a small part in reaching the world for Christ and bringing it closer together, then please join us in this work today. Even a monthly gift of $18 in 2018 would make it possible for us to survive and thrive this year and in the years to come. But truly, it begins today. Bless you, friends, and thank you for taking this challenge seriously and courageously.
Thanks, Bram. You can reach us at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And 24/7, you'll find us on the internet at CompassionRadio.com. And now, back to this Compassion Radio program.
And suggested that that might not be the best way to run a country, but the president of Iran did not appreciate me saying that.
Imagine so. Now, does Iran see itself as the guardian and the true home of Shia Islam? And are they therefore taking the lead in trying to usher in a triumphalism that would supersede what's happening in the Sunni world? Is it that clear cut for them? Or do they just see themselves as being besieged by tribal kingdoms around them, whether they're Shia or Sunni or not? Is the danger to them the schism within Islam, or is the danger they perceive the threats of other powers around them?
Well, I think your question is a very good one, and it puzzles me why the Iranians, with their history of, let's say, 200 years primarily, a little more than that, of a strong Shia control in that government or that culture, can think that with 15% of the total number of Muslims, more than a billion in the world, that they can actually influence the outcome. But they believe that they have a more logical religion because it comes down from the top with the successors or the marji'i taqlid, the people who are the sources of imitation, the religious leaders, that they are better than the Sunnis who have a loose consensus view of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very strict religious view. And they feel that they're very logical about it and that they will triumph. And that leads to situations like war on the Arabian Peninsula. Then it becomes a whole different issue affecting the lives of millions of people. I'm talking particularly about Yemen in the south of Saudi Arabia.
I'd like to pivot to the issue of Yemen pretty soon here. It does seem to be the playground of fools in some ways, that this entire nation that we don't hear much about in the West because there's no resources there that we're trying to pursue is still the sandbox for everybody's weaponry. Iran's trying to foment all of this dissent in order to siphon away the resources of Saudi Arabia and weaken them in the process. They're happy to keep poking their sticks around all these different places in the Middle East, as they've been doing in Syria. And it seems to me that the Syrian disaster is directly proportional to the interests of Iran to keep the Middle East unstable. Because of that, they've become the greatest instigators of war, and that Israel and America are correct in their assessment of Iran as being a state sponsor of terrorism. At the same time, they see themselves as doing what every other nation state must do, which is protect your national interests. And if that means keeping the neighbors weak, keep them weak. And that seems like a cold calculation, but it does seem like what they're trying to present to us, that they have the right to protect their borders, and this is how they're going to do it. And, of course, they'll disavow all the stuff they do in those countries.
I think the second part of your statement is more correct than the first one. I don't think that the Iranians would say, our goal is to destabilize the Middle East. I think they would say, our goal is to stabilize the Middle East, and it's the Western powers led by the United States and Israel that are destabilizing the Middle East. However that is, when you come to the second part of your statement, that Iran is behaving in a way that they conceive of their national self-interest, then I think that is correct. But for them to be exporting weapons, as the U.S. is to Saudi Arabia, and they are to the Houthis in Yemen and to the regime in Syria, then that becomes destabilizing. So both are true in one sense. You're right. But I think that the complexity of the situation now requires really thoughtful diplomacy. And if the two sides were willing to meet each other in a spirit of openness, I think a lot could be accomplished, because people are logical and they don't want to destroy their own homeland. So I think diplomacy is underrated at this point and needs to be.
I would certainly agree with that statement.
More attention needs to be paid to it.
Do you think there's enough will or desire between leaders within Shia and Sunni countries to come together at a table of peace and actually pursue peace? Or is it something that's going to take a different kind of spiritual overhaul in order for it to even begin?
Well, frankly, it's a wonderful question, and I don't see the intent on either side. I know from meeting with the top leaders of Al-Azhar, the leading and 1,000-year-old Islamic university in Cairo, Egypt, from meeting with those people, I know that they are very smug and secure about the Sunni dominance in the Muslim world. I also know from meeting with the Ayatollahs in Qom in Iran that they are very sure that they have the most logical and the most, let's say, divinely approved understanding of Islam, and they're not necessarily open to sitting down at the table of brotherhood with the Sunnis. That's really too bad, because before a quarter century ago, let's say, they tolerated each other for hundreds of years. There were some conflicts, but not as severe as we see it now. Now I see, and I have to blame the American meddling in the Middle East on this part, it stirred up a hornet's nest of division between Shias and Sunnis, and a lot of blood will be shed before there's a handshake across the table of friendship.
We're definitely suffering through a generation of the law of unintended consequences, for sure. I know that America's self-perception is that we are the good guys and the world's cop. We don't like the job all the time, but we do see ourselves as having that kind of moral authority when we do act. Every country wants to feel that way about their forces and about their policies. And sometimes we have to take a real hard look about how our policies are actually directly affecting the real people that live in these countries. And it's not an easy assessment to do. It's a hard one, but it's essential. And we often call to account those things on this program. And it's not in the political sense. We're not lobbying for a liberal or conservative view of foreign policy. But you have been the witness to what has happened and not happened, positively and negatively, in dozens of countries throughout that part of the world. I've had a chance to step my foot into some of them as well, and to figure out from the testimonies, from the life stories of the people that we meet, What does happen when nations step in and do something of magnitude, or sponsoring wars, or withholding help, or creating alliances? They all have real consequences. And in the kingdom of God, they have consequences as well. Now, I know, for example, that people in Iran, and even in Syria, the Christian believers there, they pray for a secular society because they know that those are the most stable. They are the ones that allow the multiplicity of views and faiths to exist. But they also pray for believers to not be secular. They want believing fellowships, believing churches, to be committed to faith life in the public realm and not be ashamed of it. They want to be free to express their faith and live it out and to care for others.
Music from Compassion Radio's Morning Song and People Need the Lord. Those harmonies just get me every time. You know, friends, the mission of Compassion Radio is to be the eyes and ears, hands, feet, and voice of Christ's compassion, serving those who suffer the most, wherever faith costs the most. Now, before we close for the day, here's a good word for the new year from Bram.
Thank you so much for making it possible for us to finish well in 2017. Because of you, we're completing 74 years of continuous ministry. Because of you, more people are hearing this daily broadcast than ever before, all across the United States. Because of you, new works of God in new places are now known here in the West, challenging the body of Christ to engage in the great work of completing the Great Commission. Because of you, we've gone to get the story of God's work right in the center of the world's most dangerous and threatened places. Because of you, persecuted believers in dozens of countries now know that they are not forgotten, that their suffering matters to God and to God's people. Friends, in 2018, we're taking one of the most important steps in the history of our ministry as we refocus on the primary purpose of helping to unite the body of Christ around the world through interactive reporting and transformational encounters. So for 2018, I'm inviting you to join us in the most important work that Compassion Radio has ever done. It begins today with your prayers, encouragement, and financial support of Compassion Radio. 2017 year-end giving was sufficient enough for us to stay on track and on this station. But we don't have the luxury of waiting passively this month. Simply put, we need you. We need to come out of the gate at full speed, in the full confidence of God's Spirit and the unity of God's people. If you've never been a part of our Compassion Radio team before, now is the time. If even 1,000 of you, spread across the hundreds of radio stations where this program is heard daily, would make the decision to join our vision team with even a small monthly gift, every question facing us, every challenge before us, would immediately turn into opportunities and even more compelling programming for you. Would you pray about this right now? If you've received any inspiration from Compassion Radio, if you've ever been challenged or moved by what you've heard here, if you've ever wanted to play even a small part in reaching the world for Christ and bringing it closer together, then please join us in this work today. Even a monthly gift of $18 in 2018 would make it possible for us to survive and thrive this year and in the years to come. But truly, it begins today. Bless you, friends, and thank you for taking this challenge seriously and courageously.
Please consider partnering with us in 2018. You will be so glad that you did. Our gift to you for joining our vision team is a special devotional booklet based on the book of Ecclesiastes in paperback or ebook format. You can connect with us right now by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail at Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Again, that's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or online at CompassionRadio.com. That phone number once more is 1-800-868-2478. I'm Jim Governale. On behalf of Bram Floria, Cher Nelson, and the team, have a wonderful day in the Lord. And join us again tomorrow on the next Compassion Radio.